And our first speaker is Harry.
Hello, I'm sorry, I'm not alone. My sobriety date is September 26, 2005. My home group is the Atlanta Group. My sponsor's name is Bob. I'm working on step 9, living in 10, 11, and 12. I'd like to share with you tonight my experience, what it was like when I was out there, my strength, which is simply me having the willingness to say, I don't know how to do it, and come in these rooms, and my hope, what I found here. I grew up in a town called Brewster, New York. It was a little far upstate around Putnam County. I was born to an Italian mother and an Irish father who was an alcoholic. And, my house was a little nutty, it was a little crazy. And, I never really felt comfortable. I never really felt comfortable with my brothers and sisters. I never really understood how they went outside and they played with each other, and, with friends and with other people. And that feeling carried through into school when I was young. You know, I had all these people around me. I had these, guys and girls, and, I called them my friends, but I never really understood what it was to spend time with people or really connect with people or really understand them. I had a lot of best friends. People would always say, oh, my best friend, Harry, I really love you. And I didn't even know what that meant. I looked into their eyes and I looked at them and I said, well, okay, great, but what does that mean for me? So really what I want to really show you is that I was never a part of. And that carried out, through my adulthood. But one thing I do remember is my Nana always told me, because she knew I was a very uncomfortable child, but she's the only one that I really had a connection with. And she told me, Harry, if you work really, really hard, and you focus on school, you can get out of here and you can do whatever you want. And I took that, and I took it to what I like to call the nth degree as an alcoholic. Which means if you were in my way, I went through you, or I went around you, or I wanted to know what you could give me, how could you make me get ahead? And that's how I lived my life for about the first 21 years. And you know what? It really, really worked. Because I did get all that stuff. I got the great car, got the great house, got the great job, got the great education. But then I saw everyone else around me. I saw my friends. They had boyfriends. They had girlfriends. They had real, true relationships. And they really, truly cared for these people. And I didn't understand how to get that. And I really, really wanted it. I saw what I wanted, but I didn't know how to get that. I didn't know how to connect with people. And it was about 21 that I started to drink. And let me tell you, when I took alcohol into my body, it was amazing, and it worked. You know what? I could talk to people. I could really understand them. I could be their best friend, and I really understood what that connection was. I really understood that. Oh, wait a minute, I would feel badly if you were in my life. I really knew what that meant. And I also began to, to really understand, how other people felt and how other people had needs. One unfortunate thing was that, is my drinking got to a point where, I'd get that wonderful feeling, but I couldn't stop. I couldn't stop after that wonderful feeling. To make, very long and hard but short drinking history of 7 years, after 8 institutions, jail time, 2 attempts on my life, 3 DUIs, and almost losing all the people that I loved in my life, I really came here and I found a home. Just a brief little story of my last drink. It was just a regular Thursday. I had just gotten paid, and at this point, I didn't know what was going to happen when I put alcohol into my body. Once again, I took that 1-2 drink, and I was looking for that time when it was good. I was looking for that time when I felt connection with people, when I could go out on the dance floor, when I could have fun, and I could talk to anyone. But at this point in my drinking, I took 1, 2, 3, and then I didn't remember what I was going to do. That particular evening, I ended up somewhere in South Bronx, performing services for gentlemen, to get dressed in alcohol. And then I ended up in Jacoby Hospital. And I remember in Jacoby Hospital, they had put me in what I affectionately call the fishbowl, where they're not really sure what to do with you. not really sure if they're going to put you in the psych ward, if they're going to put you in detox, and they can't let you go because of insurance. And it was, you know, at that point, you know, when I had talked my way out of, you know, that particular situation, and I got back home, and I tried to drink again. And I remember sitting on my living room couch, and I remember trying to take the alcohol into my body. And I remember physically, it wouldn't come, it wouldn't stay in. And then I got to a point, Harry got to a point, where Harry was with himself. Harry couldn't use alcohol to escape. So I was with me. Very scary place for an alcoholic. And then quickly after that, you know, through all those institutions, through jail time and all of that, I knew where AA was. I knew what AA was. And I had been in and out, but I never really, you know, put my foot in. I just wanted to have a paper signed or, you know, have, you know, for a court order, that kind of thing. But I came to what was a beginner's meeting Thursday night at the Atlanta Group. And I got 2 things from that meeting. The first thing was get a sponsor immediately, and the second thing was do exactly the opposite of what you wanted to do. And I remember walking into that room, and it was a scary place. But I have to tell you this thing. When people were in there, I remember my first night, people were doing things. Things were happening on time to the people at the podium when they were supposed to be up. It was, there was order there. There was some sort of stability, which I was looking for. It was truly the place that attracted me. You know, I got my sponsor, who's still my sponsor today, Bob, and I did exactly opposite of what I wanted to do. He's the one that annoyed me the most. Because you know what? He was out there, he was shaking hands, he was talking to people. And, you know, he really had a love in his eyes. And, you know, he quickly brought me through the steps. He said, Harry, this is what I require from you. All I ask is that you call me every day, you try your best, and we meet every week and we read that book. And, you know, I didn't understand what I was getting myself into. But at that point, I had no choice. I had no choice. I tried to kill myself. You know, I tried to drink myself to death, and it didn't work. You know? And as it was told to me, the only reason for these 12 steps and the only reason for this program is for me to get in touch with my higher power, which I call God because I have a lack of a better term for it. And I can honestly and truly say that I have found my higher power, which changes every day. Changes every day for me. And one of the things that I did as a beginner was I took certain actions, certain steps. Because, you know, my sponsor always told to me, he says, I don't care what you feel like. When you get into this meeting, I want you to sit down, I want you to stand up, and I want you to put your hand out, and I want you to say welcome to the newcomer. Leave your feelings at the door, because you know what? We don't have time for that. You know, you can talk to me later about those kinds of things. But this meeting, every meeting, is for the newcomer. And you know what? I didn't believe it. I didn't want to do it. And you know what? For even today, sometimes, you know, I still do it. And you know, my heart isn't in it. But you know what? It's about 1 or 2% of the time when my heart is really truly in it, and I really truly feel that connection with another human, that I do it. And you know, that for me is where my higher power is. My higher power is centered in hope. The hope that I see in these rooms. When I see, you know, these people who are so fragile, and they come in these rooms and they have nothing. They have nothing. And I see them grow, and I see them have a connection with their higher power. You know, I really want to thank my sponsees. You know, I'd like to thank Inez. I'd like to thank Millie. I'd like to thank Marat. I'd like to thank Stephen. Because you know what? If it wasn't for them, I would have no idea how to look into someone's eyes and really see that they are a human being with feelings and hopes and needs. So again, thank you all for tonight. Thank you to the Atlanta Group. Thanks.
No, not cute. our second 10-minute speaker is Diane.
Good evening. Just pray it on me. My name's Diane, and I'm an alcoholic. It was wonderful hearing Harry, and welcome to the newcomer. And I just want to say my thanks up front, because I may not have this time perfectly. I want to thank Eleanor, who's my current sponsor, and my previous sponsor, got her name just out of my head, Holly, June, all my friends that have supported me here, and all of you who have supported me by your kind words. I've been sober since this time around, since November 12, 2002, but this journey's been going on for me since 1994. I have been in and out of outpatient rehabs a number of times, and I've never been inpatient, but I love the outpatient rehabs. I like the psychotherapy aspect of analyzing everything. And if you even think it's slightly funny, laugh, please. And I just want to go through the outline of what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I did not grow up in an alcoholic family, come from a Jewish background. The most we ever drank was Manischewitz wine, and Friday nights, the great, the worst. They didn't have the flavors when I was younger. And I really didn't like the taste of alcohol when I started drinking, but I liked the escape mechanism piece of it, and I basically drank a lot to get drunk. Up until right after I got married, somehow that correlation is very interesting, because right after I got married, I loved drinking. Basically, I had married my husband after 7 years of being with him, so I was sort of familiar with him, to say the least. And we separated immediately after we got married. He went to New Mexico, and that's to work, and that's when my drinking really took off. I loved to drink by myself, in seclusion, in the moods that you always hear described, you know, with the nice glass. And my drink was cognac, and then my drink was wine and cognac. And I, drank every single day, and it eventually got to be a lot of alcohol consumption. I didn't go through any of the aggravation that a lot of people describe. I don't drive, thank God. I probably would kill myself, but I just drank sort of alone. I wasn't like a gregarious drinker, and I really loved drinking. Loved it, loved it, loved it. And then I decided in 1994 that I thought I was losing my mind. I started doing a little bit of, for me, reckless things. When I take a bath, I take my dog in the bath with me, and I was afraid I was going to drown. Had drowned myself, drowned both of us. And I decided, this drinking's out of control. So I went into an outpatient, a rehab. And I was never really committed to this program, to the degree that I never went to AA. I sort of audited AA, and I went in and out of these rehabs 3 times. And it wasn't until 2002 that I came into this group. That was the first time I'd ever belonged to a group in AA. Went regularly to meetings. Zilka was the name of my first sponsor. Saturday, to check that. I forgot about it already. And I went to a Sunday group, which is across the street from my house, and I don't go all the time, I'm ashamed to say. And I met Zilka, and she became my sponsor. And this time around, it's now been 5 years. It's been different, and I do feel differently about the program, but I'm still struggling with a lot of things, and I want to focus on the negative. I was warned many times not to, but, it is a journey, and I guess in every journey you have your ups and downs. But overall, I feel this program has helped me to deal with life better. I guess my worst feeling of being drunk, and my worst feeling about drinking was just physically the way I felt. I couldn't stand the hangovers, and I committed that I won't drink again because of that. But many of the other things, I still don't feel I've gotten 100%. I have done quite a few big book studies, and I read the big book with Eleanor, taking classes. I'm still kind of getting through the steps, even though when I say what steps I'm on, I say I'm on steps 10 to 12, but I'm sort of reworking the steps all the time, either, realistically by myself looking at them, or sometimes with Eleanor. And so that's been sort of what it was like, what happened. And currently the way that I'm able to deal with my alcoholism is I come to meetings, I'm like totally one of these people that feels guilty about everything I do. So I of course feel guilty that I don't come to enough meetings. But I do, try to come to meetings. I don't go daily, like I hear a lot of people say. I don't even go weekly sometimes, but I'm trying to, as we go into the new year, recommit to that. And, I just think that this program it's a very interesting program, because although the 12 steps are, dictated in a certain manner, in a certain language, everybody kind of deals with them in a different way. And everybody sort of sees their recovery in a different light, in a different manner. And I guess with me, I just feel like, oh, my God, I'm not doing this recovery thing right either. But I guess a lot of people don't do it perfectly. And I just pray for the strength to continue to come and to continue to stay sober. Thank you.
Our main speaker tonight is Red.
Hi, everybody. My name's Red, and I'm an alcoholic. I like to especially welcome anybody new today, anybody that's coming back. If you had a drink before you come in here, you're in the right place. If you have one when you leave here, keep coming back. That was told to me in 1959. But I didn't listen to it, and when I did come back, I came back drunk. And I just a lot of trial and error. It took what it took. It took every drink for me to be sitting here, standing here, whatever. He said, you don't like nicknames in them days, because your name. No matter what my name is, I'm an alcoholic. No matter what my job is, I'm an alcoholic. No matter what my age is, I'm an alcoholic. Because I thought I was too young when I came in here. I was 44 years old. That's 48 years ago. And I said, are you kidding me? I went to the auto group, had a little end of the cake. For 29 cents, that's what a bunch of sports. And the guy George said to me, my buddy Mikey, he said, you don't have what it takes to get your name put on that cake. I'll never forget that, but it didn't stop my drinking. And this is the place of my life. I'll give you a quick rundown. I started drinking about 8, 9, and I've been drinking it. And I fought through the war. And 1935, I was born. Joe, my friend, always says, it's funny, you were born 6 months later, AA was started. You want a bottle, And as a kid, I drank, I never drank there. I wanted to be a big shot. And the war was over in 1945, I was 10 years old, and everybody drank in the street. There were no cars, we had a jukebox. It was okay as long as you behaved yourself. Everybody drank. I looked at the biggest drunks They were my idols. And there were bars all of my group in the neighborhood, 74. Bars, bars, bars. And they all opened. And I sold papers. And I used to drink all the leftovers. And I just did that. Next thing you know, I was getting thrown out of school in 6th grade. Because I was bringing wine and Stinky Pete, 29 cents a barrel, called 5-star. My friend Eddie Coy used to always say, California wine bottled in the Bronx, you know. And it's, and that was, I got kicked out of school, I was only out. And my mother and father were worried that I'm a sneak, and I had a big family. I come from a family, I'm Irish Italian. I come from a family of 8 kids, there were 2. And I ate oatmeal when I was a kid for dinner and everything. And the reason I tell you that, because it had nothing to do with my drinking. I wanted to be a picture. I went to the Paramount to see Sinatra and Nicole. I went down to Bobby Sarkis running all over. I'm running all over. I find the dirty every day, I don't know where to go. And I thought I was on top of the world. I love hanging out. I'm going to skip a lot because in 1952, my probation officer, who was a female, and she said, you better get your act and do some go to service. You're going to join your buddies and get put away with them out of here. So I was a Korean War was on, and the Army and the Marines were drafted. The Air Force and Navy were taken to select. I went down to join the Air Force, which I figured I fail everything and then come back and give up story like I always did. Somehow I got a pretty good IQ. I remember I retain things. I'm very good with numbers and retain things I hear and see them. And like, you know, I'm getting sworn in. Where am I going? I'm getting Shanghai here, you know. And next thing you know, I'm in the service, I'm in basic, and on my own, back at home. And it's January 53, I'm on my way to Morocco. And when I got over there, I met a buddy of mine that was stationed there. And he said, I'm going to go to PX and get some. He said, you crazy. You got a booze run that goes to Gibraltar. It's $1 a bottle, whatever you drink. Canadian Club, Scotch, whatever you want. And then I said, wow, everything in the club was 20 cents, 5 cents nights. And you can get a roll around being drinking. The reason I tell this, I was there 18 months. I was out of sight. I ended up drinking, starting on that sight when I had no alcohol. We mixed it, my buddy went blind. But that didn't stop my drinking. I got discharged. I was a pretty good ball player. That allowed me to drink in the bars when I was younger. And I had a chance. I had every union in the city open to me. You name the union, I had a shot again to book in it. I said, I'm going to take a year off. My friend Joe loves my Social Security reading. You'll see from 56 to 76, $0, $0, $40, $80, $100, $500. He said, you got to be kidding. Then we read out to my wife. And I got back to these rooms in 1976. I used to go to meetings, the Yorko group, a couple of groups on the west side. I fall off the chair. And the people said, let him stay there. And they wasn't being cruel. They didn't want me to get hurt for them. They kept coming back, that's all I heard. Who belongs in here? What did you? You got a problem with alcohol. And they liked to call me the last of the dinosaurs because that's all I ever did was alcohol. And that was enough. I drank it all. I drank the Chinese booze, Shenli, Imperial, Four Roses, Carstairs. And there was a drink called Fleischmann's. There was 97 proof, and I loved that. And I drank, but I didn't like what was happening when I drank. But I didn't understand about stopping. I didn't understand. I always thought it was the last drink I had to stay away from. And I would count drinks and have them go over. I would do this, I would come out at 12 o'clock at night. I still come home 6 or 7 days later. Because as I know today, I took that first drink. But I couldn't understand that room of anything. That my life was spinning over and over and over again. And I said, I even ended up living, I was homeless about 11 years. And I ended up living in the garage. My friend Eddie just called me, Eddie Burke. And he kept me alive, so I got ready to get sober. That man fed me, took care of me, a lot of people. I had a lot of good people in my life that took care of me, and a lot of people in these rooms. And I love to tell you this story because on the day of April 6th, 1976, I was walking on Lexington Avenue, and two girls come out of Spaghetti Works, used to be the egg house. And I offered one a drink. And she said, get away from that bum, and then would come back and said, no, thank you. Can I offer you coffee and cake? I said, sure. And we started walking. And we walked to where we walked past the restaurant, Pizza Man. I said, where are we going? Just keep coming. I said, I'm going to have a orgy with these two chicks. And we're walking again there, and then, you know, we get to All Souls Church. And the Topanga group was meeting there. And they took me and ran. And I got downstairs, I saw two people I know. Brian, who I knew was Chubby. And he said, my name's Brian. I said, yeah, well, he said, yeah, you're Chubby. He said, this is Bob. And nobody ever called me Bob. I know people that knew me. I was 73 in 3 weeks. They don't even know my name is Bob. Because they see him all around. Red and Ford, that's what they say. And there was a guy, Bobby, there. And Bobby's no longer with us because Bobby picked up a drink again. And Bobby sang with the Del Satins, and he was with Stan and my friends, guys I knew well. And they backed up Dion, they did this. And Bobby's not with us no more. And that's not judging Bobby, that's letting you know that he took that first drink again. And my friend Andy was the guy I tried putting in about 29 years. And Andy always told me, we're rich to those when we drink red beer. Our favorite drinks are next one, boy. We can't get enough fast enough. And I couldn't understand that he couldn't. Andy went back and got sober. Andy 12 got more people and more things, but he couldn't keep this gift. He could not stay sober himself 2 years, back 2 years, this. But I always learned from that. And next thing you know, I was going to meetings, and I sent these two girls Shanghai me. And one girl, name was Elise, I called her Shanghai Lou. The other girl is not with us no more. She killed herself. And that I don't really talk about it much of it. She come and knock on my door once I made my bell and said, how did you manage to stay sober? And I said, stay away from one drink, one day at a time. And my father just celebrated 30 years. He came to me and I threw him out of my house. And my sponsor, who's a woman, by the way, Geraldine, but I had to get a male sponsor. She said, he's not your brother, he's another drunk. And you take him to a meeting when he comes back and introduce him to two people, which I did. Gave a couple of bumps. He's sober now 30 years. I stood out of his recovery like I was told. I never got anybody sober but me. My friend Helen, he was one of my sponsors 26 years tomorrow. He has 21 years. I sponsored women because they trust me. For some reason, they don't trust women, but I make sure they get a woman sponsor. And the great thing is, I've been around them long enough that they trust women, and they're great, so they do that. And, you know, I never feel that AA saved my life. AA gave me a life, because when my brother had a year, Spark, talking at the end, Jerry at the impact, this woman I know, and all these people. On December 10th, 1978, I decided to pick up a drink again, and I did. And then I came back, I got drunk in the bar, I was people, places, and names. And they always told me, you stay away from people, places, and names. And this one woman, I remember that place got so I'd like to remember all the things. They said, you stay out of bars, and I said, and they said, you can lead a horse to water. And I said, yeah, you can make him drink. And she just looked and smiled and said, leave me alone enough, you'll get thirsty. And she was right. I'm an alcoholic, I do not belong to the bar. If I touch the waters, I'm going to get drunk sooner or later, believe me. And things like mines are like parachutes, so they function with open. We had signs in the days where you could simple stupid. I love it because I had to get stupid to get smart. I was a wise guy and I knew all the years and I knew nothing. But I knew about playing sober. You could put on a head of a pin and 3-inch letters. Then there was things like Goya, my favorite old one. Goya, everybody thinks Goya means get off your ass, that's what it means. Utilize, don't analyze. You don't drink ego meeting, the time will take care of the rest. They told me if you don't believe in a God, you're going to get drunk. My eye of power was the coffee pot. Because I went to the meetings, I had no, it used to be an honest desire not to drink. And they turned around and they had, I went to coffee and cookies. And then I was doing okay with that, but somebody said, I said, my sponsor, Jolene, they're watching how many cookies I eat. And she said to me, well, if you make coffee at the groups, nobody's going to watch it. So I said, he was making it a game to believe. I made it a Yorko. I made it at, like, in the signal there, no, anyhow, I just kept making coffee at all the groups. They used to say, you got on the book, the basket, said something. You did that today, you're trouble. But these are the things I don't want to forget. I got my glasses up, so you got to yell it. What? 2 minutes? Oh, 15, my God. I'm not a speaker. And now, if you break my thumb, I can't talk at all. But they turned around and that, when I was getting at that age, I could play out, you know. Yes, I remember when I first went into in Hudson with Geraldine, I was with this guy, and he said, can you stop drinking for the day? I said, no. He said, can you stop drinking for an hour? I said, no. He said, can you stop at 10 minutes? I said, no. He said, well, you haven't had a drink in 20 minutes. You don't know what you're talking about. And that was very important to me because it showed that I didn't know what I was talking about. And I didn't know that I didn't know what I was talking about. But I turned around and they told me things like, you get to the meeting early. You've joined the 2020 club. I was sitting out here tonight. I like to sit in the back. A girl wanted to give me an APN. I put it in my pocket. Because I like to see, always wanted to get to remember me more. Somebody not come home and say hello. That somebody knows me. I got asked where the bathroom was the whole time. If there's coffee. But there were some people that come over and said hello that didn't know me. And that's one of the reasons I keep coming back to meetings. They told me, if you haven't met anybody there, you haven't liked, you haven't gone to enough meetings, that's for sure. And you laughed, but that's the way it was. They just go for it. They just say, you are God, you can stand and play God. And the one thing I loved about my sponsor, she told me, you know, there's no conditions on your sobriety. And I said, no conditions. That's right. As long as you think you had an eye out of the driver's seat. Then so you don't want to believe in God, you just don't believe in it. So that coffee pot was my eye of power for a long time. Because I wouldn't make the coffee. They got me to go to meetings. Meetings. The most important piece of the German Gandhi's rules were the meeting book. Then I would listen to what the man that I would say. I didn't get trouble every time I drank. But every time was I in trouble, the drink could have something to do with it. Boy, could he tell my story. And I said, well, and I thought of that and thought of that. And boy, did I identify with that. Then, I like to tell a story because it is Christmas time. Geraldine used to say to me, this proves that you're powerless of alcohol because you have a hard time saying that word. She said, it's powerless and you don't understand it. So she said, tell me the time you went to your friend, tell me all this. Tommy's dead now. I went to Tom. And it was Christmas Eve, last afternoon. New Year's Eve, I heard his wife say, when is he going home? On January 13th, my birthday, when is he getting out of here? And I left on January 28th or 29th, because Joey Arch was fighting Emil Griffin, two friends of mine. And I was going to see the fight. Now Tommy didn't live in Chicago. He lived 92nd, first and second next to Rex Bar. My mother, who took me home then, lived in 92nd, next to 3rd. It took me over 30 days to get up a block, one block. That's the grip of the grape. That's what alcohol does when I take a drink. It holds me hostage. And I went up to the reunion this year at the conference 2 years ago, and I was up there with Chubby Joe and Ron and them, and my voice, I lost my voice at the racetrack. And then people said, man, that voice here is going again. I smoked 62 years. And I finally went to the hospital, and the doctor, then they said to me, they tested me, and this and that. And then I went to Mount Sinai, I had a second opinion, and the doctor, who's one of the best surgeons in the world, and they said to me, I'm going to need you to drink. And I said, I haven't had a drink in 26 years. He said, I'm not here, you can do that. How much did you drink? I said, well, I drank pretty heavy for many years. He said, you drank a lot of whiskey. And I said, yeah, but he said that I'll bring my lives out. So it wasn't only cigarettes. Well, I mean, Anthony, whatever. But I haven't had a cigarette now, it's over 2 years. I wish I could have gave up the drink like that. I smoke 4 bags of Camels a day, maybe 5. Joe knows. And the idea was, the cigarettes I had out of it. The drink, no matter what happened in my life, I kept picking up that drink. I can honestly tell you, I never made the same mistake twice in my life. Yeah, you look at me 1,000 times here, but never twice. And that happened, over and over again, I get drunk. And if anybody knew, you just keep coming to these rooms. Because somehow, there's no magic in here. In the beginning, it's a lot of hard work. But I was told by people who were my sponsor, you do things you don't want to do, so you can do things you like to do. Like eat, get up hard and get a bed. They do this and that. Like I said, I do not think AA saved my life. It gave me a life I wanted, which you had. People in these rooms. And I kept coming back. I go to more meets today than ever. My home group is Trinity. We're 31 years old. I remember when we started Trinity, 31 years ago, October. And we started the workshop, I'll never forget. We were Betsy Antique Shop. Then we went to 71st. And I was put aside of my friend Gary. I said, Gary, would you let anybody do to you when I called the next, I would kill them? He said, well, they could have it if they could pick it up a drink. And then I remember, I said, you know, Gary, you always that quiet guy in the bar, nice guy. I always wanted to be like you. He He said, "You are, you and I, Horace and Anders. And then the things I never forget. I want to thank Brian personally for making me laugh. But I come to these rooms. He told stories. I said, oh, that's goddamn right. Grease the banners, there comes Charlie, that's... But it made me laugh, and that's what I needed. So I got, when I got an operation, they took my voice box out. And I'm still talking, that's amazing. But the idea is, the support for the rooms of AA, when I got sober to stay in my country, when I come back 28 years ago, I was welcome back. The only place I was welcome back was in the rooms of Horace and Anders. And the support that went on why I went through this year, I didn't realize I went through one of the most dramatic changes in my life, and I shrug it off. And people said, the doctor said, you made out of a change in your life. That, and of course, when I first did it, because I could never went to school, my spelling was terrible. My penmanship was even worse, Joe knows. And my charade sucked. So, was the idea that I was in big time trouble. And then, he put this piece of thing in my throat, and they told me how to talk. But today, you gotta break my dumps and keep me quiet, or get me a manicure. My friend Shai says, I'm getting a manicure. But the point of getting there is the support and love of these rooms. If you don't give it time to be around here, because you will get it if you do it. I always say I never said anything to stop anybody's drinking. And I never heard anything to start mine. When I 12-step, we 12-step with two people for that reason. Because I never say nothing to stop somebody from drinking. But they may say something that starts me drinking. Joe used to come to me. I want to thank Joe. He pitched it to me 6 months ago. And that the idea is, Joe, 12-step, many people in these rooms long before he got to them. I don't drive. I wrecked 3 cars in Texas. And he said to me, you're going to go to drunk and driver school. And I said, great. I always wanted to learn to drive better. And then that first sergeant realized I wasn't kidding. So I drove my life since 1955. And I drove the car since. So Joe was my chauffeur. And he used to be in the car. And I would get a guy a drink. They go to the VM. But Joe would say, where's my drink? And I said, you don't get nothing. You go, finally Joe got to these rooms. But the idea is there was always that help. I never had to do nothing alone in these rooms. If you're willing to put yourself out and say who you are, it's nobody's job to come up and say, wait for you. To say, hey, how you doing or whatever. It's your job, your responsibility. That's what AA taught me, it's my responsibility to be for my recovery. The fellowship is the fellowship. I can put you out the door. But the program is for me and me alone. My sponsor drilled that in me. These 12 steps are for nobody else. No conditions. Well, if they do that, they're nice to me or what? No. That's for me and me alone, because change is nobody but me. You just keep coming. If you don't drink, you'll get it. Believe me, it's that simple. And keeping it simple is the greatest thing in the world. Thoughts very important. I still try not to get too hungry, angry, lonely, and tired. I got a little dog that's home. Tonight he's not feeling well. It's not like him. He's not sick any other way. He just got no pep. And he's a little terror. I care about that little dog today. That's a miracle. One time I would have, no, I was so alone. Joe says I stole from my friend Jerry. I think Ellen gave it to him, picked it up. But thanks to you people, she taught me the most important thing I learned in my life, how to stay away from that first drink. And if I keep practicing when I learn these rules and keeping it simple, one day at a time, two words I got out of my vocabulary is never. Never say you never do this or that. Because I'm not full up of doing it. I'm an arms man. I'm picking up a drink and acting out. I remember, and that a word is can't. When I said I can, they said, don't tell me you can't, tell me you don't want it. I can understand that. And have patience, and have a slow recovery. And I think we're out of time, right? I also.
1 minute.
And the newcomers just keep coming, stay sober until you get sober. You will see things differently. That's exactly what that means. I thought I was doing everybody a favor by being around these rules. When I went out 29 years ago, you know what I thought? I thought I was sober because I was Shanghai. They say I went got Shanghai. And so I realized that many people came to these rules. That the church Shanghai and get your butt to AA. Drunk and driving Shanghai and get your the wife or husband that told them you're going to leave them. Get yourself out. Or the fourth that says you ain't got a job. You keep drinking. I hear people say, I lost this, I lost the marriage. I never lost nothing. I gave it away because of my right to drink. They told me, you keep drinking, you're going to happen this. I made you people the greatest prophets of the world. That, and we're not prophets. Drunks do what drunks do, and then the drunks know what they do, because they done it. Thank you all for my smile.